Welcome to this program, Harpinder. Thank you. Thank you for doing this with me. Let's just jump into it. As an immigrant coming to this country 7 years ago, and it really blew my mind. I was amazed. I was like, wow, this is so popular. I haven't seen any yoga studios in India. And I think it was 2011 or 2012 that I entered Canada. So from there, my journey has been such that I've seen so much happening with yoga. Mm. Now, I want to begin with, how do you describe cultural appropriation in terms of yoga and yogic practices?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if we were to turn to the definition of cultural appropriation that I often use in workshops and something I shared to my social media, how you found me, was cultural appropriation is when a member of a dominant culture takes aspects from a culture that is not their own and uses them for personal interest or profit without regard for the context, or pays respect or acknowledgement of the culture it's taking from. It can also be a way to reinforce stereotypes and contribute to oppression. This cultural appropriation shows up in a number of ways in yoga. I feel the simplest way we see it is people just equating yoga as exercise. Yoga is a physical modality, and it begins there and it ends there for a lot of people in the West. And that's the biggest way that I see cultural appropriation showing up. But I'm sure we'll cover in this episode, there's so many ways in which it shows up, and the way that we don't pay respect to the land that it comes from. And we don't take the time to even care or think about what are the true intents and goals with yoga. Why would someone be on this path? Why is it sacred for so many people on this path? And I think to get away from how sacred it is where I come in, and why it's so important for me that we try to bring back the reverence, try to bring back the importance of understanding what yoga actually is.
Absolutely true. I was taught yoga in schools when I was growing up. I'm not an expert. So I really want to understand your journey into yoga and what made you voice this appropriation side.
Absolutely. So I was raised in a Punjabi Sikh household, pretty traditional, and I saw a lot of practices of bhakti all around me, a lot of devotion, a lot of praying to God and goddesses, and just a lot of reverence around me, and sitting down in prayer and meditation. And I think for me, that was the equation of, oh, okay, so this is religion, this is spirituality, this is thinking about something bigger than myself. When I went off to UCLA, I felt a disconnect. I felt a sense of, what is my purpose for living? Why do I have anxiety? What am I going to do after college? Who am I? You know, these big questions that many of us have. And there's not always answers. There's not always classes. There are not people sitting us down saying, you were born for this purpose.
Right.
And I think those were my questions. And at UCLA, I was like, okay, I think yoga answers some of these questions. Let me go find yoga. And I went to a number of yoga studios in Westwood, where UCLA is, and it was just exercise.
Yeah.
And it was people wearing matching outfits and heated rooms. And I would leave each time feeling like, wait, who am I? Like, well, how is this yoga? Right. And I tried. I kept going to different studios in the Westwood area, and I just didn't find anything that felt right. So that was the beginning of my journey. I had these questions. Who am I? What's my purpose? How do I belong? And I turned to yoga to help me answer those questions. And what I found in Los Angeles did not answer those questions. If anything, it gave me more questions. I was like, wait, what is yoga? Is this? And that was the beginning.
I started noticing the different, the variety of yoga that I was served as a platter to choose from. The heated room, to some extent, I convinced myself that maybe they're trying to replicate the hot temperatures back in India. you know, or maybe they want to sweat more because yoga, it's not very fast paced. Those were my questions. So I can totally relate when you're saying that you entered the class and you saw all of this happening and there were questions you had and it didn't have any answers. I really want to understand this, but authenticity is always welcomed. But what is your take on different fusion styles in yoga that is now very popular in the West? You know, do you see a blurred line between appropriation and appreciation? Because as a new person, as a new citizen, I felt like this was a great opportunity. They were doing so much to yoga that we did back in India, you know.
There's a lot to unpack in just your question alone. And even to what you said around how you went into these yoga studios and it was heated and you almost had to convince yourself. You're like, okay, it must be heated because they're trying to replicate. And I find sometimes it's like we're convincing ourselves. We have this sense like, wait, something isn't right here. But instead of being able to voice it, to say it out loud, instead we almost gaslight ourselves. And we're like, well, it must be for this reason. And then it must be okay. And I think like, then turning to cultural appreciation, in my definition, is taking the time to learn and be a lifelong student, showing respect and reverence, honoring the culture and people, and crediting cultural practices from other cultures. Also being willing to try to understand and admitting when you're wrong or have caused harm, whether unintentionally or intentionally. I think this blurred line conversation between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation comes in when there are people of South Asian descent from India, from the Indian subcontinent that come into these classes and they're just like, wait, why is the studio heated? Wait, why are we practicing what's being called vinyasa? Why aren't we talking? Why aren't we practicing meditation? Why isn't there any pranayama? Like, where is the philosophy part of this? Like, why aren't any of those things elevated? And something else I was seeing going into these studio spaces, why is every teacher white?
I was like, me too. Oh my God. Yes. I was like, why is there not in like not even one single Indian teacher?
Yeah. And I took a course with Dr. Neil Dalal, and the course is called Decolonial Yoga. And he actually talks about how South Asians are excluded on purpose, are excluded from purpose, from taking up spaces of power in these spaces, because then we would say, hey, you're not doing it right. Right is subjective, but it's like from our perspective, it being our ancestral practices, that maybe you should do it a different way. And I find a lot of these people that have the power, they want to continue to profit off of it. They want to continue to do it the way that they've been doing it because it serves their interest. And who I appreciate in these conversations is those people when you're like, hey, maybe the, and I actually saw this in a studio recently, maybe the picture of Buddha in the bathroom, maybe he shouldn't be in the bathroom. Why, like Buddha, this revered idol, this example of being an enlightened being that then used himself being enlightened to serve others that were suffering, like revered by so many people, revered by me too. What's the place of Buddha being in the bathroom? Why, right? And it's like,
yeah, Harpita, this was another one of my experience when I was doing yoga here. One day there was a wine charcuterie party after the yoga. And right after we finished our practice, there was a big, huge wallpaper of Lord Ganesha up on the wall. To me, the first thing that I thought to myself was, oh my God, wow. You know, like I'm ending my practice with my spiritual Lord and I'm like, you know, the mantras are in my mind and I'm looking at that. And then suddenly I see people hanging out with wine and charcuterie. For me, and I tell my friends and everybody that I'm more spiritual than I am religious. I didn't feel good about it because I have a beautiful place for him in the northeast corner of my room where I pray every day. And then I'm looking at the wallpaper where people are hanging out and having wine and charcuterie. to me. Can I describe it in my emotions? I don't know. Who do I say that to? Should I go forward and tell my instructor, who I admire so much for her practice and her innovative asana, moving and flow? Do I just go to the manager and say that whatever is being practiced, maybe to the management? Maybe, you know, what if they don't take my feedback positively and just take away all the spiritualism that they are actually practicing with yoga away? Like, there were dilemmas of approaching this. So my question to you is, when somebody or someone is practicing it not in the usual way we have seen growing up, or like you said, you know, being right is subjective, How do you stop that? What is the interpersonal work that I need to do? And what is the step I should take in making other people aware?
Yeah, I think those are two really great but also linked questions, where one, you notice the discomfort arising. You notice the, that's not right. You notice the how Lord Ganesha is someone that you would have in, say, your on your altar in your temple room specifically that you have. I know for me, I have Guru Nanak, I have Durga Mata, and I take to every single day, I sit in front and I pray and I meditate, and every week I clean the altar. I keep it a beautiful space for them to reside, for their spirit to reside. I think for many of us, coming from these backgrounds, know that we're bringing in like the living sort of spirit essence and inviting them into our homes when we have the statues and the pictures. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening in these yoga studios is they're doing it as decoration. It's a form of decoration of saying, oh, look at us, we're practicing yoga. Oh, look, it's spiritual, without actually knowing why. What's the connection behind it? And I think for us and for me, my goodness, the amount of times I've just been like, what? And I think for us to not ignore that, to not be like, well, it's fine. I feel weird about it. I feel uncomfortable. I'll just let it go. I don't think so. I think taking that time to sit down, to contemplate, to reflect on, why do I feel uncomfortable? Because I think there's wisdom there. I think there's things there that we should uncover and we should think about. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in terms of like histories of colonialism, of oppression, of Orientalism, how that all plays a part into this as well. But first, you know, sit down, take that time to really sit with the discomfort. And secondly, I think we should speak to the teachers, to the studio owners, and we should say something. I have an example of one of my first private yoga students who now has become a very close friend of mine. One of the studios that she was teaching at very briefly had Om in the bathroom. And she went to the teacher and said, or the owner actually, and said, there's an Om in the bathroom that to me is very uncomfortable because Om is such a sign of like reverence, the primordial sound. In the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali says, if you want to realize God, then contemplate Om, then meditate on Om. And you're right, so reverent. Went to the studio owner and expressed her concerns. And the studio owner said, well, I spoke to someone else that's Indian and they said it's fine, so it's fine. And my friend quit.
Oh.
She quit teaching at that studio.
Yeah.
And I think the lesson there for me is that we have to speak our truth. We have to speak our truth. And yes, there might be fear of like, and we'll talk also about like power over and like power under the four types of power, because that plays into it as well. Because sometimes speaking up means that maybe you're going to get kicked out. Maybe it means the relationship will be over. But I think as a student in a space, take up that power and say something. Have a conversation coming out of compassion. Coming out of a place of like, wow, I really want you to understand why this pains me. And I wish for you to understand. You may not agree, but I wish for you to understand. And I think that's, it's important to bring it up so people start to understand and some teachers in the space also talk about things like, should I end my class with namaste? Should I use Sanskrit? Can I have the decor up? Is really just the tip of the iceberg. There's like so much more that's underneath that, right? Because like, why does it cause us pain to see that? Like, why does it cause you, I'll ask you, like, why does it cause you pain to see that, that Lord Ganesha, and then everyone's drinking wine and charcuterie?
Yeah, I think I was brought up with a certain set of rules. At least keep your altar clean. When have the incense sticks up in the morning. These were passed on to us as kids. So my next question to you is, tell me, how do we honor yoga practices while doing it from three angles? One is being the student. One is being a teacher. And one is when you're alone, practicing it on your own.
Absolutely. I think this is a wonderful question and a place of deep self-inquiry, because I think yoga for me and for many of my teachers is a practice and a path of self-inquiry, of self-transformation. It's not just focusing on what my physical body looks like, what my physical capacities are. It's that exploration of my consciousness, of the purusha, of the soul, knowing how interconnected we are to all, to one another, to all land, to all beings, through prana, that energetic life force. And I think this question of like, how do I better honor yoga, is a great place to sit down and contemplate, to self-inquire. And I think it even starts with acknowledging the roots of yoga and where it comes from, that it comes from South Asia, that it's over 2,500 years old, and that it's not, and I keep harping on this point, but it's just in the West, it's just what it's been dumbed down to is just a physical practice, that yoga is a body of philosophy. It's a body of intellectual, of physical, of these practices and tools that are holistic and that help us to self-transform, that help us to holistically transform, to reduce our suffering, to move towards that moksha, that liberation, to nirvana. And how do we acknowledge that there's so much potential and transformation and healing if we even just take that step back to be like, what is yoga truly? And one definition that I like of yoga is from the Bhagavad Gita, of skill in action, that yoga is the different things that we learn and then how do we apply them in our daily life. It's not just something I come to my mat, I do a balasana, I do a malasana, and then I'm done. I'm like, I did it. I did my 60 minutes of yoga, in that case, just asana, and now I'm done for the day. I can go back to acting as I always am. No, even asana is a way to really start to tune into the subtleties of our being. And I know for myself, when I practice asana, it's slower. It's slower so I can really listen to myself. There is this space of just being with myself, with my breath, with my mind. And there's no like outside voices. There are no like society telling me this, the phone ringing, telling me things, social media. It's a space for me to just be on my mat, create some spaciousness, to contemplate, to really tune in. So I think it starts with acknowledging the roots. I think it also learning from, hiring, uplifting South Asian yoga teachers, professors, researchers, because I know for myself how incredibly healing it has been to learn from teachers in India that talk about yoga as a body of philosophy, that talk about like the morals and the ethics. And another way to honor yoga is paying respect to your teachers and gurus and crediting where you're learning from. I have a very specific example. Core Power Yoga Studios, which are a huge chain of yoga studios. Yeah. on their website, and I'm writing a book right now called Liberating Yoga. On their website, it talks about how Trevor, who's the founder of Core Power, visited yoga studios all over the US. And he wanted to create something, create a yoga that was more dynamic, that was more convenient, that was more fun. And the result was Core Power Yoga, which is this new yoga. And to me, I was like, what kind of exploitive commodification is this to be like, I practice these different yogas. I want to create a new yoga that's better. And that to me just hurt me at my soul. Credit, give credit to all the teachers that you learned from. Give credit and pay respect. So there's this like lineage that continues on. Because I think when I think about that is like paying importance to history, paying importance to the ones that came before us.
It hurts on a personal level. Why do you think that is? What do you think it is? Because I'm aware of that and people are probably letting it pass, letting it roll because they don't come from that history. Do you think history is important? And what is the fastest way of educating myself if I was not educated in the way I was? What do you think is the fastest way of approaching awareness here?
That's a fantastic question. I think that's also a fantastic observation that you had, where you're taking that seat of, why does this bother me? Why does it bother me? And it doesn't seem to bother anybody else. Why is everyone else practicing goat yoga, wine yoga, beer yoga? And they seem to enjoy it. So why can't I also just enjoy it too? Why do I feel angry about this, triggered about this? And I think to come from that space of, again, that contemplation is very important, because there's a reason that you're being triggered. There's a reason that you're being like, wait, why is this happening? And where I want to affirm you here is, you're not the only one. You're not the only one that feels like this is a problem. And the specific example, say, of like beer yoga, wine yoga, absolutely just makes me just shake my head. And I feel like sometimes with these things, I've gotten to a point where I just have to laugh, where I'm just like, oh, okay, okay. But when we think about like yoga philosophy and the yoga lineages, there's absolutely nothing about alcohol. When I think about the consumption of alcohol, to me, that's adding in more Maya, that's adding in more illusion. That's not helping to bring a sense of clarity. And in conversations with people, I've had people say like, well, because we had beer yoga and wine yoga, at least more people came to yoga, right? And I'm like, they didn't come to yoga. They came to an experience. Like, let's take the yoga off of it. Why don't we call it beer Pilates? Why do we keep taking yoga and adding different things to it? And I think the answer here is because yoga has become this thing that's easy to commodify, that's easy to market, and there's billions of dollars being poured into it. So people see that. They're like, how do I get more people here? How do I make more money in the name of, well, at least they're practicing yoga? They're not. They're not practicing yoga. There's an experience that we're having, and we're creating more confusion. When I think about yoga being this path and practices that help us burn away avidya, that ignorance. And what is avidya the ignorance of? It's the ignorance that we're spiritual beings. So I think the anger that maybe we're experiencing is that we're seeing, because maybe we're seeing a little more clearly, or maybe we're not. Maybe I'm not enlightened as much as I maybe want to be. But say we are seeing a little more clearly, and we're able to see, hey, we're spiritual beings. When we drink alcohol, that isn't doing anything to connect us to that spiritual dharma that we have, that us as spiritual beings. And I think for us, if we are experiencing feeling triggered or angry by these things, to let that be okay and not just brush it away and not just be like, oh, it's okay. I think more of us that feel this way need to keep speaking about it. And need to have conversations, because I know for myself, when I first started attending yoga studios in 2012, 2013, I thought I was the only one, and I just stopped going. I just stopped going. Yeah. And it wasn't until I went to India and I was working there, I started going to the Yoga Ananda Ashram, which is such a beautiful community where I got to experience to me what felt like real yoga. That felt like enough space to connect to me as a spiritual being, as a way to connect to that feeling of, wow, we are all interconnected. There is a higher power here. But I don't think that's what's being experienced in the way yoga is being taught now. And I think that's the pain that we're feeling and why it's important to have these conversations. Yeah.
Do you think that these practices in the US, you know, however it is being taught, still have a sense of yoga left in them to benefit people?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. And it does force one to have to really think about it, because I mean, asana does still come from yoga. You know, it's still a part of yoga. It's one of the eight limbs. And in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, there's only two mentions of it, but there is still the mention of asana. I think there's still something to be said about moving our physical body in a way of the tapas, of that fire of discipline, but also that devotion to being there on our mat that I think still does things for us. And I think there's still so much benefit to the practices. And I do wish maybe the pop music was like lower down a little bit so I could focus a little bit more on those practices. But I think it's to say that asana does come from yoga. So we can still say like there is that percentage of asana comes from yoga. And yes, has it been turned into like the yin yoga, restorative yoga, the vinyasa, hot yoga, the Bikram yoga, and the styles that have come out from it. But I think there's still a lot of benefit to doing these practices and why people continue to do them and turn to them. And I know I've had students come in different ways. And I've had some students that started with meditation, then turned to asana, then turned to philosophy. I've had some students that had been practicing asana for years, for 10, 11, yeah. 12 years. And all of a sudden they had this awakening. They're like, wait, I think there's more to yoga than just this. And that's when they would find me and they'd be like, hey, can you teach me what more there is? And I was like, I would love to teach you what more there is. So I think it can offer a like stepping stone to then wanting to learn more. I think what is happening though, people still just think yoga is a physical practice and that's all there is. And I think that's my concern, is that we don't have credible teachers and spaces that continue on the lineage of yoga. Because what I'm worried about is there being erasure, that there's going to be erasure of yoga philosophy, or the dilution, or it becomes distorted and we lose all of that richness. So I'm really interested in myself and in teachers of like mind that want to keep the rich practices alive, that don't want it to become so distorted, so erased that we lose those aspects of it. So this comes from one of my teachers, Dr. Neil Dalal, who is fantastic. And like I said, has that course, Decolonial Yoga. What he talks about, so when people are thinking about the cultural appropriation of yoga, sometimes they're looking for a checklist. Can I use Sanskrit? Should I say namaste at the end of class? Can I wear a bindi? And what he says is a checklist is not enough. So the real inquiry and deeper work here is in understanding the roots, theories, and history so we can see a cultural appropriation happens as a result of colonialism, oppression, and Orientalism, which have been internalized into us. And so I think maybe we can turn a little bit of time right now into talking about the definitions of colonialism and talking about how colonialism affected South Asia, how it affected the Indian subcontinent, and how that changed yoga and how that affected it. Because I think, and what we were talking about, like if a yoga studio is doing something that's making us uncomfortable, can we go and ask them, can you change and have that question? I think that's a conversation also of like oppression, who has the power? And that yeah. plays a part into cultural appropriation, because it in cultural appropriation, it's looking at the taker and the taken. So it's the dominant culture that has more power that's able to take aspects of a culture and use it for their benefit without having to ask permission. There wasn't right. any, and it's hard because yoga isn't actually like owned by anybody. So it's not like it necessarily is owned by anybody, and there's no one to really truly ask permission for. So I think like, to what we explore here then with cultural appropriation is like the taking that happens, the taking without giving credit, the theft that can happen, the erasure that can happen.
And the dilution of the practice.
And the dilution that happens, the whitewashing that can happen, the exotification that can happen. And I find it's the exotification that sometimes plays into when it's just an asana class, there's pop music playing, and at the end, everyone's like, namaste, and like, bow together. And that's maybe the only remaining sign that this has anything to do with the yoga from South Asia. This was such a lovely conversation, and we could definitely spend hours and hours talking about it because there's so much here. So for those that do listen to this, I want to encourage you to keep studying, keep learning, keep listening, keep inquiring, and not from a place of like, oh, I'm doing it wrong, so I'm bad. No, once you realize like, oh, maybe I should have done it a different way. Okay, then realign yourself, change, and then move forward with compassion. Because I think there's also no point in like beating ourselves or criticizing ourselves when we realize like, oh, wow, I was ignorant. Wow, I should have been doing it a different way. So I encourage everybody to keep learning, keep studying about these things. This, however minute long this interview conversation will be, should also just be the tip of the iceberg, and continue inquiring.
Yeah. Thank you for ending this conversation on such a beautiful note. So namaste, pranam, sat sri akal. Thank you so much for joining us in this program, Harpinder. I am so grateful to have you here.
It was so wonderful to be here. Thank you so much.